1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
It's time now for Breakthrough Thinking, the magazine. Interviews with the stars, movie reviews, insight talk, and up-and-coming talent. Everything you want rolled together for the next 2 hours. Topics such as love, family, social talk, fun, leisure, and travel. And that's just for starters. No matter where you are, the magazine has arrived. Now, here are your hosts for Breakthrough Thinking, the magazine, Dave Isaac and Greg Isaac.
And welcome to the magazine, heard every Thursday from 2 to 4, and of course, part of the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network, every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Greg, I should have just said Monday through Friday, 2 to 4, but I went the long route because I like scenery.
Yes, you did.
Don't know what that has to do with anything, but just
I'm kind of getting what
if you're driving,
about,
yeah. You want the long route sometime. On various occasions, you want the long route, and especially on nice dates. Okay, Joseph, Iardo. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excellent today. I'm so excited about today's show.
We got a great show. Someone that is very well known, no question about it. Incredible TV credits, film credits, and of course, certainly best known perhaps for the Crypt Keeper in Tales from the Crypt. John Kassir will be joining us any second, so this is why you're excited.
Yeah, well, let me tell you a little bit about the movie that he's in. It's opening on March 1st. It is called Jack the Giant Slayer. It's from director Bryan Singer. Basically kind of a takeoff on the Jack and the Beanstalk fairy tale, right, that we're all familiar with. Nicholas Holt stars in it, and John Kassir plays the right half of the giant two-headed villain, General Fallon. And so, you know, it's very exciting, right?
Well, this is very exciting. I've seen the previews. I can't wait to see it. Soon to be released. And joining us now is one of the stars, of course. One of the stars. It's John Kassir, soon to be released film, Jack the Giant Slayer. Slayer. John, how are you?
Fine creeps.
Oh, you are good, I got to tell you.
How you guys doing?
Oh, we are good. Thank you so much for calling into the magazine, and we really appreciate it. Of course, you are so well known for the Crypt Keeper in Tales from the Crypt. That sounded great. Where did you develop these voices?
You know, it's funny. I mean, I've been doing them since I was a kid, really. I mean, I love doing voices since I was a little kid, imitating everything on the TV set. I think also maybe because I was dyslexic as a kid, and back in the day, they didn't really know what that was. So I had trouble getting through school, you know, in the normal way. And I remember having some teachers that, you know, could see that I had, you know, skills to get up orally and read poetry in the class and that kind of stuff, where I play all the different characters, and I got involved in the theater as a kid and that kind of thing. So, you know, it was that kind of thing. And then, of course, when I started doing stand-up comedy, kind of fell into stand-up comedy in a funny way when I was doing an off-Broadway show called Three Guys Naked from the Waist Down, which was about stand-up comics. And it was me and Scott Bakula and a guy named Jerry Kolker who wrote the piece. And I was approached by this show called Star Search back then. It was a brand-new show. And they wanted me to come on the show, and they said, we want you to come on as a stand-up comedian and compete. And I said, well, you know, I'm not really a stand-up comic, just playing this part. And they go, well, you can win $100,000. And I went, say something about my stand-up career. And so I went on and kept winning, and my material, because I really wasn't a joke teller, was all these different characters and voices and that kind of thing. I would do the Wizard of Oz and, you know, 2 minutes and that kind of thing. As mayor of the Munchkin City in the county of the Land of Oz, you know, I do that kind of stuff.
That is fantastic. And I heard, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you won the Star Search competition and you edged out Rosie O'Donnell and Sinbad.
That's right. I beat Rosie O'Donnell in the semifinals, and they were both up-and-coming comedians and obviously on their way to big things. And Sinbad in the finals. And I remember in one of the later shows that I was on, they had Tom Jones was a guest host on there with Ed McMahon. Mm. And Ed goes, we have a big announcement to make. Tom loves the comedian. John Cassier is going to have him open for him in Vegas. And I'm like backstage going, I have no act. How am I going to open for Tom Jones? I don't have an act, you know. Because I had just been writing this stuff, you know, on the show, going on the show 2.5 minutes each week to go on there. I really hadn't done any stand-up comedy other than playing a stand-up comic in the play. And so I got my butt into the stand-up clubs and started working up an act. And of course, you know, I started doing all my voices and that kind of thing. And that's essentially how I was seen by people who invited me to come audition for Tales from the Crypt. Doing, they wanted an actor, comedian who could do voices to come in and audition. So I went down to the Kevin Yeager's studio and auditioned for the part.
That is fantastic. I mean, that's a really neat story. And, you know, it reminds me of another comedian who I really enjoy that also doesn't do much anymore stand-up, but had a lot of different voices. That's Howie Mandel. Have you ever met him?
Oh, I love Howie, yeah.
Yeah.
We've run into each other over the years. He's always been a real, no pun intended, stand-up guy. but he's obviously very funny, and people love him as a host and that kind of thing. But he was also a producer and tried to help out other comedians with shows. I remember auditioning for him years ago when he was doing a kid's show based on Sea Monkeys.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of fun goofing around together at that time.
Well, you know, John, you're very, very accomplished. I mean, your TV credits include Mockingbird Lane, The Amanda Burns Show, First and Ten. I could go on and on. Film credits include Smurfs, Race to Witch Mountain, George of the Jungle 2, Toy Story 2, and it goes on and on. Let me ask you a question. I mean, you're very diverse, very versatile in your talents. When you do voiceovers versus acting, and I know it is a form of acting anyway, but just, mm-hmm. you know, the pure acting, what are the differences there? Do you see any differences between voiceovers and actual acting?
Well, that's a great question. There definitely is. It's not obvious to everybody, but each type of acting is different too. Acting on stage is very different from acting for film or television. Acting on stage, of course, you have a lot of rehearsal because you're going to be up in front of an audience. There's a lot of material for you to learn, and not only learn, but get it to the point where, you know, you no longer have to think about it so that you're able to do everything. And when you do musicals, you also have to sing and dance and learn all the music. And that, of course, is the most fun process for somebody like me who has all these different talents to be able to get out there and get in the theater. And then, of course, television, it works very fast, but it's very technical. And then, of course, you have to get past all that technical stuff and deliver very quickly. Film, of course, is very subtle, and, you know, it's about putting as much of yourself into the performance as you can without you know, forgetting that you have skills and just being alive within that. And voiceover, of course, you don't have as much preparation because you're reading it off a script and you're going, I mean, I can go in my pajamas if I feel like it, you know. Although I don't know if I'd get hired again, but go have a good time. But the difficult thing in voiceover is you don't have all those elements there. You don't have the rehearsal. Sometimes you don't even have the other actors. Sometimes you're voicing your stuff by yourself. Sometimes you're fortunate enough to have other actors to play off of, but a lot of times you don't. So you have to imagine all the other things, and they're telling you what physically is happening. Sometimes they're showing you storyboards or pictures. Or I remember auditioning for Miko the raccoon in Pocahontas, which I wound up playing. And there was, you know, I went in there thinking that the character talked, and when I got in there, they're like, no, he's a raccoon, and he makes, you know, noises, and I'm like this, and they're like, yeah, exactly, you know, and the room was full of storyboards, so they're like, okay, Miko is running towards the edge of the cliff, he jumps off the log like it's a diving board, he goes, you know, 30 feet through the air, and halfway down he decides he's changed his mind, and he's fighting through the air, but he goes into the water, you know, with a splash, he pops his head up, spits the water out, and then giggles. Go.
Oh, wow.
You know, so there's a lot of that. Now, when I got to do Jack, the Giant Slayer, this was performance capture, which a lot of people don't know about this process, but it's the same process that was used in Avatar, where you are actually acting, and you're acting in a big room with all these sensors and cameras and people at computers. It's kind of like performing for NASA.
Oh, jeez.
And you have all these people around you capturing you. You're wearing these odd suits with sensors on them, and they've mapped your face and recorded it all into the computer so that it picks up everything you do. And you don't have the sets. You don't have the costumes. You do have the other actors, which is great. And you're imagining, okay, you're running through the hallway of this castle, and you're chasing Jack, and you grab him, and on top of it, we had to put together two people to make one with Bill Nye and myself. And working with Bill was amazing. I don't know if you know Bill's work, but
yeah,
from Love Actually and Pirates of the Caribbean and Pirate Radio and Marigold Hotel, and he's just a wonderful actor. And we had to play a two-headed giant and had to create this character where the two of us were a two-headed giant. So we were using Bill's body and his head as well, and he had to act, and I had to mirror him physically.
Wow.
So that my body was moving the same as his, but then act separately with my head and my right arm, since I'm the head and arm that's attached. So it was... Talk about having some technical things that, all my theater and mime training and that kind of thing came into play there. But then the voiceover thing of having to imagine everything that was there came into play at the same time. Now, my character also has no vocal cords, so he speaks through all these strange sounds and weird, gestations. So I had to also, emote with my face and my hands, and you're like, but yeah, but you don't look like you in the movie. Yeah, that's true, because then they take it all, put it into the computer, and these geniuses go in there and they add everything on me like it's makeup, and they add the costumes that Joanna Johnston designed onto me like their costumes, and they connect me and build together, and they do these wonderful things in post and connect everything that we've done so that our performance comes through. So in a lot of ways, performance capture was more challenging but exciting and used more of my skills than anything that I've ever done. So it was really exciting. It was a really exciting process.
Well, and John, once again, for our listeners, this is John Kassir on behalf of Jack the Giant Slayer, among other things. But the movie is coming out on March 1st, and I can't wait to see it. I get to see it next week. And later on in the show, we're going to give listeners a chance to see it as well on IMAX 3D. But I'm curious, can you do the voice or the gestations of this character for us?
Well, I'll just do a little thing for you. That's
how Dave normally sounds.
that's just like one small range of it. I mean, it's the thing that on the page, it doesn't say much about the character other than he makes these, moist utterances. And of course he is, present with Bill's head as well. They've, grown up together. So I had to create this dialogue, and when we did the table read, nobody knew what was going to come out of my mouth, and nobody knew what Bill was going to sound like or anything. And Bill, first Bill opens his mouth, and this amazing, character that he created came out, and then this stuff that I started doing came out, and everybody was like, oh my God, that's so cool. It's creepy. So, through also performing with the other actors like Stanley Tucci and Ewan McGregor and Nicholas Holt and Eleanor Tomlinson and all the, these great actors, bringing some comedy and fun to this action adventure as well was a fun thing for us, because originally when you read the script, it read pretty dark, and we were a pretty scary and creepy character, which is all there, but at times we're also the funniest character in the movie, and at times we're also the we have some sentimental kind of touching parts in the movie as well, And so they're not just literally not just two-dimensional characters. They are three-dimensional, But not just from the point of view of when you see it on the screen. And I highly suggest you go see it in IMAX 3D because you will feel like you're standing amongst giants. You know, the technology is so amazing, and you will feel, at times feel like you're a giant looking down on little humans and that kind of thing. But it's so that's amazing. But, you know, we got to fill out the third dimension of these characters, breathe life into them. As actors, it was sure a great process in the movie. The script was amazing. We're working with an amazing director in Brian Singer, who you know, just guided us down the right path, but then also cut us loose to do a lot of different stuff that we weren't expecting to be able to do. And of course, some of that best parts of that wound up in the movie as well. And just got to work with, you know, I got to shoot 4 months in London with, you know, with some of my favorite actors, and it was just an amazing experience for me.
And how did you like being in London there? Is that the first time that you've been over there in London? Or?
You know, I've gone to London many times over the years. You know, a lot of my friends are actors, of course, and I always like to go over and see them when they're in shows in the West End and that kind of thing. And I mean, I love going over to Europe. I had done USO tours as a comedian many years ago, and loved traveling all over the world. London, of course, is a very expensive city, and it's sure certainly a lot of fun going on somebody else's dime. So, you know, when they pay your way and they fly you first class on British Airways, and you know, it's like, yeah, I can sleep here for a while. This is better than my apartment was in New York.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. And you mentioned that you were there for 4 months. Now, with this type of technology, you mentioned kind of similar to, you know, what Avatar was. Mm-hmm. Did the production of the film, in your mind, take longer than some of the other films you've worked on, whether they're animated or live action, or was it still around the same amount of time?
Well, certainly the post-production is a lot longer because mm-hmm. it's a lot of effects guys painstakingly try to not only capture what you've done but add the little subtleties. And the more money they spend and the more time they have to add all this stuff to it to make it as realistic as possible for you, the better it becomes. Obviously, I mean, sometimes you see projects that, you know, like game, you know, interactive games and stuff like that, they don't have the money, you know, $200 million like this movie did to make it, you know, to make it as realistic as possible. So you see that. It looks more animated. It looks more cartoony. This they had the challenge of, Avatar obviously had all that great colorful characters and took place in a different world and that kind of thing, which is tough enough. But then taking the characters that are motion capture characters and putting them in the same exact environment as humans and making it all look like it's all the same is really difficult. And these guys were inventing stuff as they were going along because it's, you know, I mean, these guys are geniuses. I mean, some of them have invented some technology that, you know, that it, you know, takes, you know, an Einstein to do. And then you have all these great artists, and a lot of them had worked on Avatar. The two guys that created my look for my face were the same guys that did Gollum for Lord of the Rings, so that was kind of cool. So I did wind up with a very fun and unique face, which was, you know, added to my own face, like makeup. So you see similarities. If you know what I look like, you can see the similarities, especially when you're watching it on the movie moving because it follows every single facial muscle of my face. But it's a long process of the way that they capture all your information so the computer has it, so it recognizes you when you walk out onto what they call the volume, where you perform your where you do your performance, and they capture it and they film you. So in that sense, it takes a lot longer of preparation and technical aspects. Shooting it, once we have all our rehearsals down and things of, you do a lot of testing to see how fast you can move to make it so it comes out on screen like a giant as opposed to a regular-sized human, that kind of thing. And we had really great movement guy, Peter Elliott, working with us on that. He's done a lot of, like, you know, apes in the movies and stuff like that. And so it is a longer process. I mean, I was there for 2 months at a time, twice during the year we shot. So I was there for 2 months, came back to L.A. for a while, worked here, and then came back there for another 2 months. It took them 7 months to shoot the movie, but it probably took them over a year to finish the movie, year more to finish all the effects. And certainly it's an expensive venture to do, but I think you're going to see every penny on the screen in this movie.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I know we're all looking forward to it. And while you were on set, John, by any chance did the Crypt Keeper and the Leprechaun have any run-ins?
No, not of anything fierce.
And for our listeners that may not know what I mean, Warwick Davis, the actor who played the Leprechaun, of course,
great actor.
In this movie as well.
Yeah, he's really great. He plays a thespian telling the story of the Jack in the movie. I won't ruin it for you, but he's great. But it was fun. I mean, I got to work with some actors that have played some of the most memorable characters in film. Bill's character of Davy Jones is similar in style to this kind of movie. You know, the Pirates of the Caribbean. So this has that kind of action-adventure kind of feel to it.
And, John, when we learned that you were going to be on the show, I was so excited. One, because I was excited about this movie, but also, I mean, I think everyone loves The Crypt Keeper. But when I looked into your resume here, one thing stood out that really defined my childhood. It is a cartoon from Warner Brothers. Do you know what I'm talking about? And could you do that?
Tiny Toons?
Yes. Could you do that voice, please?
Tiny, we're toony, we're all a little loony. Yeah. No, I
Buster Bunny, right?
Buster Bunny. Now, I should say, I was blessed to be able to take over for Charlie Adler in that role, which was kind of funny because I know Charlie and we'd worked together a number of times, and he directs me in a lot of cartoons as well. And had been doing Buster Bunny for a number of years, the way Mel Blanc had done voices for so many years. And Charlie went on to other projects, including directing a lot. And so when they needed to replace him with somebody, they called me directly. I didn't even audition for it because there was something in my voice that they heard. I think there was actually an episode where Buster Bunny does the Crypt Keeper, which was really funny. And so they were like, wow, I guess they have the same kind of quality in their voice. That's funny, I called up Charlie. I go, you're not doing this anymore, right? Because I don't want to take over your part because I don't want you coming stealing the Crypt Keeper from me. And he said, no, I don't have the time to do it, And I was blessed with the opportunity to come in and play Buster Bunny.
Wow.
Which was a lot of fun. I mean, it's a really great community. Voice acting is a great community of really wonderful voice actors, and I'm really proud to be part of that fraternity of guys.
And John, speaking of community, we have something in common. Apparently, you live or reside in Topanga Canyon. Is that true?
Yeah, Topanga?
Oh, yeah. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, and I remember all the canyon hikes and driving through up to Malibu and fun times.
Yeah, it's a great place to live. It's, just up in the mountains from Malibu, so I'm 4.5 miles from the beach, and I grew up in a rural part of Maryland, and I had horses when I moved out here. I bought some horses because I really was into them when I was a kid, and I wanted a place with horse trails. And it's about 80% parkland up here. A lot of people are afraid to come up here because it's kind of remote, but we like it that way up here.
Oh, that's great out there.
I love living here. It's a beautiful part of California. It's the largest park surrounded by a city center in the United States. I mean, there are obviously much bigger parks, but this is the largest one surrounded by a city center. And so it's a pretty impressive place to live. Obviously, it was big in the 60s with all the hippies.
Oh, yeah.
Laurel Canyon got too busy. All the great musicians of that time moved out here to have their privacy and work on their music. And
I remember the day.
It was, or whatever.
It was very, very nice. No question about it. And it continues to be nice. John, thank you so much for coming on today. We'd love to have you on again, and we encourage everyone to get out and see the great film that's coming out, being released, I think, March 1st. Jack,
March 1st.
The Giant Slayer, our guest, of course, today, John Kassir. Thank you, John. We'd love to have you on again. You have a great, great day.
If you know, if you don't know Jack the Giant Slayer, you don't know Jack.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Thanks,
and, of course, that's John Kassir, one of the stars for the soon-to-be-released Jack the Giant Slayer. I can't wait to see this. Joseph Erdo.
Yeah. Iardo.
No, well, really.
Yeah. Hey, that was almost close.
I've seen the previews. It looks, you know, it's PG-13. I think a lot of people can see this film. It looks pretty good to me.
Yeah, it's an adventure. And again, you know, if you stick with us here after the break, we're going to give you information on how to get tickets or how print passes to an advanced screening of the movie taking place the beginning of next week.
And now, how does this sound?
Hi, my little pretty.
Tom, please take Dave out of the studio.
Okay. Anyway, this is the magazine, 2 to 4 every Thursday, and we will be
to the professionals.
Right back.
At Beerham Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.